We're going to continue the hour by talking about an important topic that's unfortunately going to affect all of us sooner or later, and that's the act of dying, and specifically the right to die with dignity. There's a growing movement nationwide to allow terminal patients the right to end their lives on their own terms. Advocates say it saves them and their families a great deal of pain and suffering. Still, though, only legal in a handful of states, 10 states plus Washington, D.C., not in North Carolina. Stephen Petro is a writer from Hillsboro, author of several books, regular contributor to the New York Times and the Washington Post. He's the Piedmont Laureate for the year 2024, and he had to confront this very issue within his own immediate family just last year. He wrote about it in the New York Times in a column called "I Promised My Sister I Would Write About How She Chose to Die." And Stephen joins us on the phone now to talk about the column and the issue and his experience. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, Aaron, thank you for having me. And let me just say, this is the first time I'm actually going to be talking about this, and I'm a little anxious about that. Sometimes it's easier as a writer to, you know, go in your room and write, but you know, to talk brings it to a different level. So I just wanted to preface this conversation with that.
Walk us through the experience that you and your family had in the last year and in the last couple of years. What stands out to you now, reflecting back?
So my sister Julie was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, advanced ovarian cancer, in the fall of 2017. And we knew from the outset the odds were against her, but she had very good treatment. She was a strong and resilient person. And she made it through year five, which was about what we had been told to expect. And but after that point, things started to turn for the worse. The medications that she had been taking no longer were effective in slowing the growth of her tumors. And when it came to March of last year, March or April, she had pretty much exhausted every legitimate treatment and decided to forego additional treatment. She had been thinking about medical aid in dying, the right to die, you know, for quite some time. It is legal in New Jersey where she lives. Most people, even in states where it is legal, don't know about it. Sort of a curious aside is that it's been the law there for 5 years now, and only 186 people have taken advantage of it or used it. In any case, she began to learn more about it. She began to talk with our family about that. You know, we hoped that she would, and she hoped that she would have a natural death, which is to say that the disease would take her in a way that was not painful. Her oncologist had suggested that because she had metastases in her liver, it would be likely that they would grow and then that she would just sort of fall asleep, which sounded, you know, about as good as it gets, you know, for dying. But that didn't happen. They just continued to grow, and the hospice medications, basically fentanyl and morphine, were not able to really alleviate a lot of the pain. And so in June of last year, she decided that she was going to go this route, and sort of began to make the various preparations for that.
Was it difficult for her to get information? Did that obstacle exist?
It wasn't difficult to get information, but it is somewhat arduous to apply for certification. You can't just go to your doctor or just go to a pharmacist and say, please mix up these drugs for me. There's in all of the states, you have to make a series of requests. There has to be a period of time between them. And you have to be given the right to rescind at each point, all of which, you know, makes sense. But, you know, for someone who is dying, it's kind of a lot to do. And also, by making it so lengthy, it can take up at least up to a month, you know, you put people in a real bind. And in most states, you have to be a resident of that state. So, you know, people who are in neighboring states, for New Jersey, like New York, like Connecticut, Pennsylvania, they cannot go to New Jersey and avail themselves of this. So the next part of the movement is actually to try to amend residency requirements. But that's where it stays now. And so she did get, you know, approved. She had the medications made up. Her wife brought them home. I'll just note that generally they're not covered by insurance. In some instances they may be. They're expensive, which also makes it, you know, there's an economic divide then as to who can take advantage of this program and who cannot.
I'm sure family relationships have to enter into it as well. I know just from my extremely limited experience dealing with the healthcare system, it's so important if you're the patient and you're going through something really serious to have an advocate on your side to ask the questions and help make the decisions and navigate you through the process. And I'm sure there are a lot of families where one person wants to make the decision and the rest of the family doesn't want them to. This wasn't the case for you, though.
It wasn't. And Julie has always been sort of both gregarious and a take charge type of person. Mm-hmm. And she did not want to die, but she allowed us to talk about that possibility and then talk about that reality when it started to happen. And that really did, in a sense, make it easier for us because our entire family, which was my brother and his kids, and then Julie and Maddie's daughters, we were part of the conversation and we were all on the same page because Julie was our leader. And that did make it more palatable. You know, there are lots of families where, for a variety of reasons, there's discord or there's dissent, and you know, it gets tricky. Old family business can be brought into it. So I feel that we were blessed by my sister's openness and willingness to talk about hard topics.
What did you experience that you didn't expect to that you remember the most?
That's a really good question. I'll say that, initially I was on the other side of the fence because I realized later I didn't want her to leave. I didn't want her to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way my mind worked earlier was, well, I don't want her to leave earlier than she has to. But what I did see as time went on, how much pain she was really in, how hard they had worked to try to mitigate that. And, I said to myself, and we talked as a family, there's no question that it's a much more humane decision to be able to have control over end of life and to make this choice and not to just ride it out for another couple of weeks or a couple of months while suffering. And so that was really an important transition in my own head about it. And, I'm glad that I'm glad that she had that ability to choose, and I'm very sorrowful that she's not here, so I have to hold both of those things.
Speaking with Stephen Petro, talking about his recent column in the New York Times, I promised my sister I would write about how she chose to die, which is available on the New York Times website, and my next question has to deal with that title. What is it about this experience and this larger issue that made it so important for Julie to insist that you write about it and then for you to follow up and write what must have been a really difficult piece?
So Julie had always been politically involved. She and her family testified on behalf of marriage equality in New Jersey. She left a video for the family after she passed where she, as an aside, talked very strongly about all sorts of political issues. And she felt that she wanted others to be able to have this opportunity to choose how they die on their own terms. And so she asked me, very directly to write about it after she passed. We talked about it. We did some interviews about it. And, so I felt obligated is really not the right word. I felt this sense of duty to do this. And yes, it was probably the most difficult piece of work that I have ever written. Probably the second most difficult was earlier in the year when she asked me to write her obituary ahead of time because she wanted to be sure that I did it right.
Was she satisfied with the way you wrote it?
Not initially. she was a younger sister, but it was good. we sort of had fun with it in terms of what to include and what not to include, and so on and so forth. But again, when she first said that to me, I was like, holy schmoly.
What's been the reaction to the piece?
You know, Aaron, I have stopped reading reader comments at this point in time because often they're just so mean-spirited. And so I wasn't reading them. And a friend said, you know, you should really look at the comments on the Times site. Not only are there so many, but they're all positive. And these are amazing stories. And so I did. And indeed, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, mostly other people talking about bad deaths, painful deaths, where they could not, make this kind of decision. And such a rawness, and such a beauty in the way that people were expressing themselves. And it'd be fair to say that I think this is a piece that's gotten more comment than anything that that I've written before, which I know Julie would be glad about, and means her voice is still out there. And also people felt like they got to know Julie through this piece. So, there's a lot of sort of family history in it as well.
I agree with that. I finished the piece and I know you already, but I felt like I got to know not just Julie, but you better and other family members as well. It's a really striking piece. And I think this goes along the lines with what has been an ongoing movement, but something that continues to grow, which is this understanding now that we so often seek to lengthen our lives as much as possible. But the key, especially at the end, is quality of life more than length of life. And that always entails quality of death as well, which is a hard thing to talk about, but it's something that we have to if we want to achieve what we want out of life.
Yes. And I mean, Julie was only 61.
Yeah.
So it was not, the longest life, but I will say it was probably one of the richest that I know. And she, even before she was ill, she was always out and about. And just to tell you this, we went on a family vacation after she had some surgeries, and she was just like the Energizer bunny. Let's do this, let's do that. The rest of us were like completely exhausted. And that was my sister. She just embraced life, until the very end. And in fact, the morning that she chose to die, she and my brother went out to her garden, which was something that she loved. And my brother is a landscaper, and they did a little work in it. And I think that was her happy place. And then, and then she came back into the house, and we were all together for a little bit. And she went upstairs with her wife and her daughters and said goodbye.
Speaking with Stephen Petro again, the piece is called I Promised My Sister I Would Write About How She Chose to Die. It's on the New York Times website, nytimes.com. We got to wrap up as we do. We haven't talked about the politics of the issue, but let's wrap up with that. This is a right that exists in 10 states plus Washington, D.C., not in North Carolina. What are the obstacles to getting this in other states? And if people want to get involved, what can they do?
Yeah, it's been surprising to me that this has become a political issue. I mean, it's been more than 25 years since Oregon first allowed the right to die. But I guess everything becomes a political issue these days. Opponents have included Catholic Church, and the Pope not that long ago spoke out against this. And then disability groups have also been concerned that this would be an opportunity for family members to push their loved ones who are ill towards an untimely death. But I actually think it reflects a larger discomfort with death and dying in our culture, in our society and in our country, that we really just don't want to deal with what you said at the very top is all of us are going to confront this at some point, and how can we make it better for everyone by giving us choice. It's just about choice.
Again, the piece is I Promised My Sister I Would Write About How She Chose to Die. It's available on the New York Times website. You can find the entire piece there and read it. It's very well worth it, and read the comments as well, because this is the rare instance when the comments are worth reading as well. Stephen Petro, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Talk to you soon.